NHL draft, NIL, all things, and then some, that Bill Roberts can entertain. He joins us in the John Schuster Caldwell Banker Hotline. He's the commissioner of the USHL and beyond. Bill, thank you for joining us tonight.
Always a pleasure, Mike, to speak to you and the great listeners out there in WCCO land.
Now, you were at in Montreal for the draft, correct?
I was.
What was that like from your perspective? What do you do? What do you get done? And what was it like?
Well, it was twofold for me and my current role as the United States Hockey League Commissioner. We had our summer business meetings in Montreal in connection with the NHL draft. So we had those all day Thursday, and then those meetings, and we went to the Bell Center to celebrate hopefully the success at that moment of the NHL draft for former alums and players that are currently playing in the United States Hockey League. And it was a banner first day, banner draft overall.
Yeah, you said 57 overall were taken in the draft?
Yes, and that was the fifth consecutive year we've had over 50 players drafted into the NHL, which is incredible for our league.
Well, there's not much better marketing to it. And that just, hey, guys, we had 50-some kids drafted. What more do you need to know, right?
Absolutely, and 98% of those kids will go on to play Division I college hockey. Most of them have already accepted commitments to play at universities all across the United States. So it's a testament to the great league. And to frankly, Mike, I didn't know that much about the league before I came into it. I've learned a lot. And the league is really a feeder system into both college hockey and the NHL. And it is the premier Tier 1 league in the world right now.
Does anyone go from the USHL right to, where they excel and they jump and they go right to a professional team?
There's probably a couple every other year or so that go. I don't believe anybody this year will jump right to the NHL, but you never know what could happen and what kind of money is thrown at some of these players. And, you know, we had the third overall pick this year, Logan Cooley.
Yeah, we were talking about him.
Who played with the National Development Team, and they have a great program. Overall, outside of Detroit, Michigan. But I have to say, in the past, we've had the first two players picked in the draft before I was in the league. And it just, every year, it seems to build up in the amount of scouts that come to our games. NHL scouts is over the top. Sometimes there's up to 20 to 25 scouts at several of these USHL games.
Has it changed a lot since you worked for the Wild in terms of the intensity of scouting and how we produce them here in the U.S.? And has that changed dramatically, or has it always been kind of a scouts grinders league where you go to the USHL and keep turning up the rocks to find out what you can find?
Well, I think it used to be like that quite a bit. When I started back with the Mighty Ducks and the Wild, it was kind of a grinder where you had all your scouts and all your bird dog scouts out looking at talent all over the country. But now they have all these select camps, and the USHL has several every year. Our first camp of the year is in Pittsburgh. It starts out in September, and it's all 16 NHL teams and several youth teams playing. And we had over 375 scouts,
really,
and college coaches at it. In Pittsburgh at the Penguins practice facility. So it's changed quite a bit. It's a lot like baseball now, where there's not as many bird dogs is out scouting individual games. They're going to these select camps and seeing the players. It's a much more efficient use of time, energy, and money for NHL teams and college programs as well.
Well, and the other piece to it is now, and I'm not saying that this is, you know, great high def always, but it's pretty easy to get video of these kids playing in a league like the USHL, right? So you can watch a lot of games live or on tape or whatever you want through streaming services that you couldn't before, correct?
Correct. Every one of our regular season games is streamed on a platform called Flow Sports. so fans can get those games, scouts can get those games, NHL GMs get those games. In fact, on my way out to Montreal, I was on the flight with a lot of the Minnesota Wild scouting staff, including Bill Guerin, and I had a chance to have dinner with Bill prior to our flight, and I go back with him in the Olympics, both in 2000.
Oh, did you know him from there?
Yes, he was a player at that time when I was in Salt Lake and in Turin, Italy, and the World Cup of Hockey as well in 2006. So we go back and remain friends and still talk to him from time to time. But I asked him about our league, and he said, "Bill, it's the premier junior league in all the world, and we have a lot to look at these players." Surprisingly, in the past, though, I think it depends on the GM and the coach. Some GMs really like the league and really focus on that, and others don't. But the Wild, and you know, I looked at the history when I went back and looked, and the Wild have, you know, they've selected in the past 10 years over 20 of our players, which seems like a lot, but there's teams that have selected like double that amount. So
really,
what that tells me is everybody looks at it a little bit differently. But Bill spoke so highly of the league, and it's a tribute to the kind of coaches and players that this league gets. I sound so boastful about it, but what I'm saying is I didn't realize getting into it, coming from the NHL and then coming from the college ranks, how big a deal the USHL really is.
Bill Robertson, our guest, as a former commissioner of a hockey league, Division I hockey league, and I don't know that they would have been that impacted by NIL money and the transfer portal, but to an extent they certainly are, because they all are. But you've been an administrator in that capacity. What scares you the most about where college sports are at, knowing what you know and knowing how money is now going to be the overriding factor for so many?
Well, I think they have to have some guardrails in place, and I don't think they're very good right now. I think it's still the wild, wild west. And when I was in the WCHA, I warned all of our schools about NILs coming, and you're going to have to be ready for it. And the shift is going from the university to the student-athlete, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm seeing, Mike, and this isn't rocket science, but it's the haves and have-nots. And I heard your conversation yesterday morning with Pete Najeri on the Sports Huddle show on Sunday morning, and you guys were talking a little bit about it. But it is scary, because when you get to the premier sports such as football and basketball, and then you get to sports like hockey and baseball, it really comes down to who can afford what. So your Alabamas and your Floridas and your Michigans and Ohio States can afford something different than schools that, say, were in the MAC conference or the WAC or the Big West conference. So you're going to see a real shift, I believe, in all the NCAA sports coming in the next couple of years. We've just reached the tip of this.
Yeah.
But what I'm afraid of is the guardrails aren't in place.
Right.
So there's people getting deals out there, and I don't think it's happening locally as much as it is more in the SEC and other places, where these deals are just incredible for the young athlete. And I don't think it's fair to the other students that they're playing with, student-athletes.
Well, that is. Bill Robertson's our guest, and you bring up a great point there. This is Pandora's box opened at warp speed. And so you get it to an institution where a few guys get the money. Now, let's just say they don't end up being the star players. You got a problem in the locker room, you know?
You bet. You can imagine if the quarterback is getting several $100,000 for making appearances and has his own car and he has a pizza deal, and he's not sharing that with the offensive lineman and his teammates, how hard is that going to be for those kids to look and say, geez, I'm working for you?
Absolutely. Or he gets beat out, you know, in the third game. He doesn't play well, and they go, you're out, but you still got the deals, you know?
Yes. And to the young student athlete, if they have the ability to get those deals, more power to them. I don't think that's a problem. But college athletics has changed since you and I were in college, for sure, and it's about to change again. And you're going to see these super conferences, and then everything else is going to be at another level, I think, over time, which is very sad to me, because the in college hockey in particular, the unions, the providences, the small, these smaller schools could compete at the Division I level and play effectively. Minnesota State Mankato made it all the way to the championship game. And
Denver's not that big either, and they won it.
Correct. Those are smaller schools that are winning the national titles. That does not happen in college football, and I don't see it happening in college basketball either.
But can do you think hockey will end up maintaining what it is? In other words, it'll be a football, basketball, Super Five, or whatever it is, and then everybody else is here, and hockey will fit into some in that stratosphere somewhere below that, you know, that Power Five, football, basketball, and they can stay comfortable where they are? Or do you think that's almost impossible because the money will dictate it?
Well, I think the money will dictate a lot of – it always does, but I think it'll be a tier below that. And I think single-sport conferences like hockey are in trouble because I think they're going to get absorbed by bigger conferences to say you're going to be part of our overall umbrella. And that's just a fact of life. Whether it's men's hockey or women's hockey, that's going to be an issue moving forward because schools aren't going to be able to or want to afford to fund a single sport conference like hockey.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't even figured out where all the carnage is on this. Well, I got a baseball question for you because you worked with the Angels and you know L.A. well. What would you do if you were still working PR with Ohtani? You've got this thing that nobody's ever really seen before. The team's not playing well. He's a standout. He sells tickets, etc. How do you manage a situation like that?
Well, one thing they have for sure is they have over, I believe it's 50 Asian media covering him every day in Anaheim.
I mean, that's just to give people perspective, the Twins don't have 50 total right now.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. They have over 50. Now, when I was with the Angels, they had the first pitcher, Shigetoshi Hasegawa, who's not a big name at the time, but back in the early 2000s and the late 1990s, he was the first American League player with Japanese descent.
Before Ishiro, yeah.
Yes, and Nomo was the first one with the Dodgers.
Yep.
In the National League, and we had over 25 media covering us every day.
And that's just the Asian piece of it. You still got the Americans, the regular beat writers and TV stations and everything else.
Correct. So what I would do handling him is every time we went to a city, I would try to get a majority of the media responsibilities. And they are responsibilities, and I believe they need to take care of that because they have to be selling that product and that person to the public since their team is not doing well. So if it's me, we go into each city and do media availability every homestand or every road trip, excuse me, and then before every homestand, we try to do that at the beginning and get him out there and do all the things he needs to do to make that name, the Anaheim Angels, successful. That's how I would project it. So he has time to focus on his pitching and the other piece, his bat, the designated here. He is a one special player from what I understand. And I'm told, Mike, a real quick story is last year when he played in the All-Star game, he had a bonus clause. I think it was $200,000 to make the All-Star team from the Angels. He took all the money and gave it to the clubhouse attendants, the trainers, the equipment managers, and the PR staff, the people that are taking care of him on a daily basis. He split it all up, he had his agent do all that, and they cut him all checks as gifts, not as taxable income. But he wanted to make sure that they got that for all the people that did for him.
That is called a great alliance to have if you're generous like that. Hey, Bill, we're out of time. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll do it again, but thanks for the insight.
All right. Look forward to talking to you soon, Mike. Take care.
You bet. Bill Robertson.